Have you ever, like accidentally hit the wrong key on your keyboard while you're just browsing the internet and suddenly the whole web page disappears?
Oh yeah, and it's just replaced by that massive wall of like complicated color-coded text.
Yes, exactly. The source code.
Right, the HTML and all that JavaScript, it can be pretty jarring if you aren't expecting it.
It really is. Because normally, we just look at the clean, polished interface, the photos, the little buttons, the catchy
It's
headline.
the stuff that makes sense to our eyes.
Right, exactly. But behind that smooth facade is this incredibly complex, invisible architecture that is dictating exactly how every single thing functions. And, well, today we are essentially pulling up the source code of our society. So, welcome, Truth Seekers, on behalf of the Great Awakening Report, to this week's Truth Seekers Weekly Briefing Alternative News Review for August 14th, 2026.
And I gotta say, it is quite a remarkable stack of briefing notes we are diving into today.
It really is. And the goal here is to treat this alternative news review as like a totally distinct information layer. We aren't just looking at a different spin on mainstream news.
Right, we're analyzing the signals and the patterns that are often totally overlooked or just absent from the mainstream coverage entirely.
Exactly. So that's our mission today. This deep dive is going to be a masterclass in connecting the dots. We're stepping outside the dominant news cycle to explore the deeper layers of societal transformation. We're going to look at several distinct signals today, showing what they call a great global convergence, spanning across infrastructure, finance, disclosure, and even consciousness itself.
Yeah, and let's establish our ground rules right up front for you listening. We're acting strictly as impartial guides today.
Right.
We're pulling from sources that examine massive systemic change. And look, some of those sources venture into spaces that the mainstream considers completely speculative.
Oh, definitely.
But our role here isn't to take political sides, right? Or to claim absolute, verifiable certainty about every single alleged event in the notes. We are here to examine the threads, identify the patterns, and just help you, the listener, understand the underlying mechanisms of what is actually shifting in the world.
Yeah, we're looking at the how and the why behind these emerging narratives. And to understand this convergence, we actually have to start by, well, looking up.
Literally looking up.
Literally. Our first signal is the celestial environment. So just 2 days ago, on August 12th, a total solar eclipse swept across Greenland, Iceland, and mainland Europe, specifically right across Spain and Portugal.
Which, just astronomically speaking, is a highly significant event.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That is the first total solar eclipse visible from mainland Europe since 1999, I believe.
Wow. Okay, 1999. But the briefing points out this deeply fascinating overlap. This eclipse coincided perfectly with the peak of the Perseid meteor shower. So we had this incredibly rare window where the precise geometry of a total eclipse happened at the exact same moment the Earth was plowing through the massive debris stream of Comet Swift-Tuttle.
It's visually and really mathematically stunning.
Yeah.
But here is where we need to apply our first layer of discernment, right?
Okay, let's do it.
From a modern scientific standpoint, these are highly predictable mechanical events. An eclipse does not physically cause geopolitical shifts.
Right. It's not a magic ray hitting the earth.
Exactly. It doesn't cause changes in financial policy. There's no physical, magnetic, or gravitational mechanism for that. We have to really separate the astronomy from the causation.
I hear you, but I want to push back on that just a little bit.
Okay, go for it.
Because even if there's no physical mechanism, humans are essentially meaning-making
Oh,
machines.
totally. We look for patterns everywhere.
Right. It is so deeply ingrained in us to look at a darkened sky and feel a shift. Like, think about being in a large theater before a play begins. The audience is chatting, they're looking at their phones, totally distracted.
Right, eating popcorn.
Yeah, just doing their own thing. Then the house lights dim. That dimming doesn't write the script of the play.
Right.
It doesn't physically move the actors on the stage, but it is this universal psychological signal to every single person in that room that a new act is starting and they need to pay attention.
You know, that is a highly accurate way to frame it. Historically, symbolically, humanity has always utilized dramatic celestial events exactly like that, as psychological pivots.
Exactly.
There are markers that prompt deep societal reflection. When the familiar sky is temporarily obscured and then revealed again in a new light, it culturally mimics the process of intense societal transformation.
It shakes people out of their routines.
Yes, it reminds them that they exist within a dynamic, constantly changing environment. And historically, when those big societal pivots happen, The first thing that changes is how authorities manage and track the populace.
Which is a perfect segue, because that brings us directly to our second signal. We are moving from the macrocosmos down to how you and I move through the physical and digital world.
The invisible architecture of identity.
Right, specifically the normalization of biometric surveillance.
And this is one of the most consequential, yet quiet, structural shifts happening in the world right now. The briefing outlines a very specific progression of systems here.
Walk us through it.
Well, it begins with age verification, which is usually introduced under the completely understandable banner of child safety online.
Right, and obviously everyone agrees we want to keep kids safe online. Nobody is arguing against that.
Exactly. But the briefing shows how it never just stops there. The tracks are laid down for age verification. Then that exact same system expands to verified attributes.
Like proving your residency or your employment status.
Right. And then, once people are used to that, it morphs into a unified digital credential. And finally, it becomes the mandatory key for general platform access.
Just to use the internet at all.
Exactly. And the mechanical reality of this is playing out right now with the European Union's AI Act, which is running parallel to police forces actively experimenting with facial recognition at major transit hubs across Europe.
Okay, let's break that down, because honestly, we hear something like EU AI Act, and it just sounds like a boring bureaucratic headline. What does that act actually do, and how does it connect to, like, a camera at a train station?
So the EU AI Act is basically designed to categorize artificial intelligence by risk. You have unacceptable risk, high risk, and so on. Real-time biometric identification in public spaces is generally considered highly restrictive under this act.
Okay, that sounds like a good thing.
It does, but, and here's the catch, the legislation contains critical carve-outs and exceptions for law enforcement. Things like searching for specific victims or terrorism suspects.
But isn't that exactly how function creep happens?
Oh, 100%.
Because it feels a bit like when your smartphone pushes a new software update, right? Yeah. You get a notification about a new, highly convenient feature like unlocking your phone just by looking at it.
Right, Face ID.
Yeah. So you accept the minor change to the terms of service because it's convenient, but under the hood, the core operating system has fundamentally changed how it processes your biological data.
Yes.
Suddenly, the hardware and software are universally capable of mapping your face.
That is a brilliant analogy, and it perfectly illustrates the shift from targeted to persistent data. Look, the debate over whether facial recognition technology works, that debate is over. It works. The real structural shift is the erosion of practical anonymity.
What do you mean by practical anonymity?
Well, historically, if police wanted to track someone in a transit hub, they had to deploy physical officers or sit there manually reviewing hours of grainy CCTV footage. That is targeted surveillance. It takes effort.
Right. It's expensive and slow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what the infrastructure is shifting toward is persistent surveillance, where the cameras are constantly verifying every single face against a database in real time.
So, for you listening right now, imagine your daily commute. You walk through a train station, grab a coffee, check the departure board. Today, you are entirely anonymous in that crowd. Nobody knows who you are.
You're just a person.
Right. But if this biometric infrastructure becomes fully normalized and interoperable across systems, your face becomes a permanent searchable credential just by existing in that public space.
Yeah.
You don't hand over an ID card. Your biological geometry is automatically logged. So the question is, if we build a high-speed technological train and we label it child safety or public safety, what is stopping that exact same train from carrying mass surveillance 5 years down the line?
Mechanically speaking, absolutely nothing. Once the interoperable database exists, it simply requires a policy change to expand its use. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a face isn't a password. You can't just reset it if the database gets hacked or compromised.
Man, that is heavy. And if they have the architecture to know exactly who you are and where you are at all times, the absolute next logical step is knowing exactly how you transact.
Always follow the money.
Always. Which is our third signal? The rebuilding of the monetary rails. We are looking at a fundamental shift away from the legacy banking system.
And this is where the concept of the Great Convergence really starts to materialize in the briefing. It heavily focuses on the financial maneuvers of the BRICS nations.
Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and all their expanding partners.
Right.
But I want to clarify something here, because I feel like alternative media often gets this wrong, or they oversimplify it.
Yeah, they do.
you hear these breathless reports that BRICS is going to announce a single unified currency, like a BRICS euro, basically, that will magically destroy the US dollar overnight. But the briefing actually quotes Sanjay Malhotra, the Reserve Bank of India governor, and he basically says that's not the goal at all.
Exactly. The concept of a single paper currency with all their flags printed on it is a total distraction. The actual strategy they're employing is something called local currency settlement.
Okay, so pretend I know absolutely nothing about international banking. What does local currency settlement actually mean mechanically?
Okay, think about the current system, which is primarily dominated by the SWIFT messaging network. If a business in India wants to buy goods from a business in Brazil, they typically can't just trade rupees for reais.
Why not?
Because the rails aren't built for it. The Indian company has to convert its rupees into US dollars first, send those dollars through Western correspondent banks, and then the Brazilian company converts those dollars into reais on their end.
So the US dollar is like the mandatory middleman.
Exactly, which gives the West immense geopolitical leverage. It's like a toll booth on the global trade highway.
Okay, so local currency settlement is basically building a bypass road around the toll booth.
Yes, precisely. They are building direct digital pipelines between their central banks so they can settle trades directly in their own native currencies. India pays in rupees, Brazil receives it directly in reais, totally bypassing the dollar middleman and the SWIFT system altogether.
Wow. And it's not just BRICS doing this, right? The briefing mentions the International Monetary Fund. The IMF is studying stablecoins, and the Bank for International Settlements is exploring tokenized bank deposits and central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs.
Yeah, the BIS is heavily involved in that.
I feel like these terms get thrown around like a word salad. How is a tokenized deposit or a CBDC any different from, like, the digital money I already see when I log into my banking app on my phone?
It's a profound difference in the underlying plumbing.
Mm.
Right now, the money in your banking app is essentially just an IOU on a private bank's ledger. It takes days to actually settle between institutions behind the scenes.
Right.
But a CBDC, or a tokenized deposit, is programmable money. It operates on a unified cryptographic ledger. The transaction and the settlement happen instantaneously because the money itself is a piece of code.
Which means it can be programmed with conditions.
Exactly. That's the kicker. It can be programmed to only be valid for certain goods, or it could be programmed to expire after a certain date to stimulate spending in a bad economy.
Wow. Okay. So, to put this whole financial signal in perspective for you listening, it's not about taking a massive wrecking ball to the old US dollar highway. The dollar is still the reserve currency. It's still deeply entrenched.
Oh yeah, it's not disappearing tomorrow.
Right. Instead, the invisible architecture being built is this sprawling, digital, programmable, high-speed rail network all around that old highway. It might take years, but eventually, fewer and fewer countries actually need to drive on the highway. They just take the high-speed rail.
And whoever controls the switching stations on that high-speed rail controls the flow of global value.
Okay, so we've mapped out the physical infrastructure of biometric identity and the financial infrastructure of programmable money. Our fourth signal takes a hard left turn into the infrastructure of institutional secrecy.
Yeah, this is a fascinating pivot.
We are talking about UAP disclosure, unidentified anomalous phenomena, what we used to just call UFOs.
And, you know, this might seem like a totally unrelated topic at first glance, but it is fundamentally about how institutions manage paradigm-shifting information. The briefing highlights that the U.S. government is actively formalizing the process for UAP disclosure. On July 31st, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, issued new guidance. They've established a system called PURSIFU.
PURSIFU. What does that stand for?
It stands for the Presidential Unsealing and Reporting System for UAP Encounters.
Wait, PURSIFU. So they've actually created a formalized, named, bureaucratic channel specifically for government whistleblowers and defense contractors to report UFOs.
Yes, and from a structural standpoint, it shows that the intelligence apparatus is no longer treating this as just a fringe novelty.
Right. It's not a joke to them anymore.
Exactly. It is being managed as a highly sensitive records and oversight issue.
But the alternative briefing points out a pretty glaring issue here, which is the chasm between the bureaucratic process and actual proof.
The evidence gap.
Yeah. For example, it cites an ongoing allegation regarding the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. There are claims they are holding a classified high-definition video of a massive 100-foot triangular object hovering over a military installation in Colorado.
Right.
And apparently it displays unbelievable camouflage and flight characteristics.
And here is where we must rigorously apply our rule of discernment, because we have this formalized reporting process, but the public evidence gap remains massive.
Sure.
The Colorado video is alleged. It remains totally unverified by independent researchers because it is locked behind a classification wall.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of bureaucratic motion, but very little verifiable physical proof is actually being released to the public.
And this is where I really want to pull all these threads together, because there is an incredible, almost staggering irony here when you look at these signals side by side.
No, the paradox of visibility is wild.
Exactly. On one hand, through biometric surveillance and digital programmable money, governments are demanding almost total molecular level visibility into the lives, movements, and finances of everyday citizens.
Total transparency for the public.
Right. But simultaneously, when citizens demand visibility into legacy defense programs, like a 100-foot triangular craft, the government throws up a massive wall of classification. They've essentially built an official, highly regulated suggestion box for UFO encounters called PBRSU.
Yeah.
But they still maintain absolute control over who holds the key to open that box.
It is a massive tug of war over transparency. And this actually reveals the sort of aha moment of this great convergence we're discussing. Have you thought about why these shifts in money, biometrics, and disclosure are all happening at the exact same time?
I was just going to ask that, like, why now?
Because the legacy structures of control are losing their grip on the public narrative. Trust in institutions is in free fall right now. And when institutions sense a loss of narrative control, which is being fueled by decentralized communications, alternative reporting, podcasts, everything, they often accelerate the building of structural control.
Oh, wow.
If people no longer believe the story you were telling them, your fallback is to control the infrastructure they rely on, their identity, and their money. The UAP issue is simply the most extreme example of the public realizing that the official narrative is completely incomplete.
Wow. Okay, if you're listening to this right now, you might need to take a deep breath, because we've gone from cosmic alignments to persistent facial recognition to programmable central bank digital currencies bypassing the dollar to classified triangular craft.
It's a lot to process.
And the realization that the architecture of society is being rapidly rewired around us while we're living in it, it is incredibly heavy. Which brings us to our fifth and arguably most vital signal, the observer mindset.
Yeah, because it is entirely natural to feel a sense of overwhelm or anxiety when you view these signals collectively. We are looking at systemic changes occurring simultaneously across multiple pillars of modern life.
Economic pressure, censorship debates, the volatility of what is even considered truth right now.
Exactly. It's causing millions of people to radically reconsider their relationship with authority, their health, their purpose.
But the alternative briefing offers a really important warning here. It says that seeing beyond the veil carries its own distinct psychological risks.
Yes.
Because when people realize the mainstream narrative is flawed, there's this tendency to run headlong into the opposite direction. So how do you stay open to these mind-bending systemic changes without losing your grip on reality?
By understanding that true awakening is not just an act of rejection. If you simply decide that everything in the mainstream is an absolute lie, and everything published in alternative media is absolute truth, you haven't actually awakened.
You've just updated your software to a different echo chamber.
Precisely. You become highly vulnerable to sensationalism, to manufactured outrage, and to confirmation bias.
Like assuming that because two things happen at the exact same time, one definitely caused the other.
Exactly. Connection is not causation. Discernment is the ability to separate documented infrastructure changes, like the EU AI Act or the BRICS settlement ledgers we talked about, from purely speculative allegations.
What?
Developing an observer mindset means you look at these developments, you watch the patterns form, but you consciously refuse to immediately react out of fear or panic.
It's about maintaining a gap between the stimulus and your response. You don't just react, you evaluate. And that really brings us to our conscious wrap-up for today.
Yeah.
Because we are undeniably living through a complex, rapidly accelerating era. The invisible architecture of our world is being rewired while we are still living inside the building.
And in an environment like that, your emotional resilience, your physical well-being, your community connections, and your ability to maintain that observer mindset are your absolute most essential assets. True sovereignty isn't just about financial independence. It's about cognitive independence.
That is so well said. When you can observe these massive systems without slipping into panic, you actually retain your power. So, as we close out this deep dive, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final provocative thought, something to just chew on as you move through your day. We've spent the last chunk of time talking about incredibly powerful, centralized systems being built, digital ID grids, programmable monetary rails, classified institutional silos. But what if the ultimate battleground isn't actually in the biometric databases or the tokenized ledgers? What if the real battleground is simply your attention and your emotional state?
The one thing they cannot program.
Exactly. What happens to these massive centralized systems of control if we simply choose to observe them neutrally, rather than reacting with the fear, the anger, or the division that they so often rely on to function? Does a system fundamentally lose its leverage when the observer flat out refuses to play the emotional game?
It's a profound question.
Think about the source code we talked about at the very beginning of the deep dive. You don't have to panic just because you finally see the complex text running the website. You just have to decide how you want to navigate the page.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, truth seekers.